Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, so adi karub, guten tak, ciao, we viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison, killitary, industrial, core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mockracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, ew. And the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. That is the reason that there should be a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. All of the preceding, all of the above, as we attempt to confront speciesism. Yes, the oppression that is still acceptable to progressives, speciesism. Actually, when you think about it, speciesism is still acceptable to animal product-eating vegetarians, huh? Kind of speciesist about cows and chickens. Our language is just, speciesist language is pervasive. I mean, it's everywhere, right? I mean, that's the way we denigrate people. We call them animals, right? And we denigrate animals by calling them it, as if they were things. If you want to call somebody a name and, you know, dehumanize them, you call them, you know, you pig, you swine, you cow, you rat, you snake, you dog, you jackass. None of those meant to be complimentary, although I would take them that way compared to the behavior of most Homo sapiens. Kill two birds with one stone. I don't want to kill any birds. You know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. Why would I want to skin a cat one way? It's all so insensitive, huh? You wouldn't really expect someone who was a vice president of farm animal protection for a supposed major animal protection organization to use speciesist language, right? Wrong, because Paul Shapiro, well, I wrote something actually in the on Facebook and Twitter, because Paul Shapiro wrote something in the Huffington Post. I said Paul Shapiro should watch his speciesist language. In a revealing comment in the Huffington Post, this Humane Society of the United States Vice President of Farm Animal Protection, LOL. I wish I still had a laugh track on this show. I did many years ago. We're low budget. I'll say LOL. Imagine the laugh track. So when criticizing the federal government for spending almost $140 million to purchase unwanted chicken, he said that the chicken industry last week seemed happy as a pig in bleep. I used to have a bleep, too. I used to have a laugh track and a bleep, but this is imagination of the mind radio, okay? So, and you know what the word was that was just bleeped, right? So, you know, what's amazing, too, is that he was decrying that apparently these chickens froze to death and weren't killed the proper way, acceptable to the Humane Society of the United States, which last week I identified as part of the livestock sector, whose mission it is to meet the needs of a 70% increase in demand for animal agriculture products by 2050. So don't be fooled. This is a front for the meat industry. But if he's talking about chickens, you know, and the Humane Society of the United States is really tied in with the Global Animal Partnership, GAP, which is the rating system for animal products at Whole Foods. You know, the city of Sacramento Animal Services has confiscated 200 hens and 130 roosters who were left in cages without food or water for 4 days. By the way, time is running out for the 130 rescued roosters who have to be adopted by Tuesday. So please contact Animal Place if you can help with the adoptions, animalplace.org. It was originally reported by Animal Place that these birds came from a global animal partnership producer and were rated step 5 in the GAP program, supposedly highest animal welfare. The 5-step GAP program, as I said, is that rating system for Whole Foods meat, created in partnership with HSUS. Mune Park, former HSUS vice president, became, you know, the director of GAP. But GAP contacted Animal Place to clarify, saying these birds were not from a step-rated farm certified under the Global Animal Partnership 5-step animal welfare standards. And Animal Place contacted the person who secured the birds, and the person who confiscated the birds, and confirmation was received that the birds did in fact come from a producer that is a step 3 chickens and step 5 chickens certified by GAP. Pretty confusing, right? Is somebody speaking an untruth here? What's going on? Well, it turns out that there is a big gap in the GAP program, and that is that one producer can operate multiple farms and treat birds differently on each farm. Some farms can be step 3 certified, some can be step 5 certified, and some farms, you know, could just do what they want and sell birds off to someone who'll starve them for 4 days. And well, the name of this producer seems to be withheld by Animal Place, seems to be referring to the producer's website, which doesn't seem to mention anything about the birds it tortures and kills who are not covered by the GAP guidelines. It only mentions that it is a step 3 this and step 5 that, and quote, we care deeply about animal welfare. Huh. Okay, so the farm who sold the birds to an animal enterprise that starved them and deprived them of water for 4 days is reported to have at least 16 chicken farms and 6 turkey farms, and who knows, what GAP certification any of them have, really. It's all such a mess. And Paul Shapiro was upset that these chickens weren't killed the right way, and said the chicken industry last week seemed happy as a pig in bleep. Well, you know, so I'm quoting, him there. Well, what we do know is that HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, has nothing but contempt for pigs and the other animals it markets to profit. Well, what we do know is that current HSUS policies are being created and influenced by its pig farmer vice president. He's not the vice president of animal protection, Joe Maxwell, who breeds and murders 50,000 innocent, harmless animals annually. To the Humane Society of the United States, pigs are things, they're property, they're commodities, and, that Paul Shapiro, their protector VP dude, makes derisive jokes about them, perpetuates myths about, their filth and their stupidity to be happy as a pig in blank, right? I mean, and you did mean blank, right? Didn't you, Mr. Shapiro? You couldn't possibly have meant happy as a pig in Joe Maxwell's death row barn, could you? I mean, when are you going to do your job, Mr. Shapiro, and start protecting pigs and other animals from your colleagues around the office? That's they need protection from them. That would be a newsflash, right? Meat industry executive Paul Shapiro actually protecting farm animals, as his job title suggests. What form could that possibly take? It was reported today that the red toner has disappeared from all the copy machines at HSUS, and concurrently, animal rights slogans in red paint are suspiciously appearing on the door to the office of Joe Maxwell. Slogans like, even though bleep makes them happy, Pigs are our friends and not food. Signed, oh, it looks like, let me see here. It looks like P.S. Oh, with a big X over it, and then it says, oops, sorry, really meant signed ALF. Okay, that was one incident. Also, other red graffiti on Joe Maxwell's door. Don't eat babe, even though her happiness depends on being in bleep. Again signed, it's hard to read the writing here, it looks like a PS, oh yes, with an X over it, crossed out, oh, and it says, and sorry, forgot again, ALF. Let's see, other direct action inside the Washington, D.C. HSUS offices. Well, it seems that Joe Maxwell's butcher knives keep disappearing from his desk drawer, and showing up in dumpsters outside vegan restaurants in the Washington, D.C. area. So, well, while I can't imagine enslaved animals imprisoned in their own excrement to be happy, nor would I imagine any animal in the, life-to-murder food processing system happy. Once again, I'm always confused by HSUS, really, and it's happy meat, but Poopy Mouth, Paul Shapiro, seems to think that, well, the pork coming out of the pig processing system must be happy, the pigs must be happy, because as it happens, they are all covered, or not all, but there's so many of them are covered with bleep. There was an article in the Washington Post, USDA official defends pork inspection pilot program. Top food, this was Kimberly Kindy writing in the Washington Post, the top food safety official at the USDA, says that a pilot program for inspecting pork is working well, defending the experimental procedures being used in live hog plants around the country. Phil Durfler, deputy administrator for the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service, said in an interview with the meat industry's trade magazine Meeting Place. Ah, we are running out of time, huh? Okay. Oh, I wanted to get to this. All right, we'll see if we can get to it sometime today during the show. Coming up on today's program, Victoria Moran, author, Simone Reyes of Running Russell Simmons, Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. On Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, please make a donation, support the program so we can buy airtime at goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. And before I talk to Jed Solis, we got cut off last week. We ran out of time when I was broadcasting from the World Veg Festival at Golden Gate Park. I mean, I have to finish this paragraph that I started just before the break, and hopefully I'll get to more of this story at the end. But I just wanted to mention, before we talk to Jed, that quote was Phil Durfler, deputy administrator for USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service, said in an interview with the meat industry trade magazine Meeting Place that government inspectors are making more checks for contamination under the pilot program known as HIMP. That's why more fecal material is being found on the meat in the processing plants using the experimental procedures, he said in the interview published Friday. This would be weeks ago. And just to complete the thought, in May, the USDA Inspector General reported that three of the pilot plants were among the 10 worst offenders in the country for health and problems with lapses that included failing to remove fecal matter from meat. So there you go, Mr. Paul Shapiro, happy as a pig in bleep. And if you're eating ham and pork and, you're happy to be eating the pig who's happy to be in the bleep. I would say it would be better to go vegan. And last week we were talking about the Sacramento Vegan Challenge, which is going on now through the 20th of October. And Jed Solis is part of the Vegan Challenge and also Team Veg in Sacramento. And so tell us a bit about what's going on with the challenge and Team Veg for you, Jed.
Well, the Chef Challenge was started 2 years ago, and that was a big success. Bethany Davis started that, and kind of in collaboration with that, I was on my way to becoming vegan. I transitioned over and wanted to start my own fitness challenge, so to see where I could go and what I could do with my fitness on a 100% vegan diet. So that sparked my transition on my 30th birthday, August 6th last year, and had the best season of my life. And then now this year, training for my second marathon. So I did CIM last year, the California International. Did well, around a 250, which is well below the Boston qualifying time. And now this year, I've already had personal records in three races, training for my second marathon, running 80 to 100-mile weeks. Just did a half marathon this morning. All the best runners in Sacramento decided to come out. There's 5,000 people there, and I got 11th overall and third in my age group, and set a personal record, ran a 1:14:24. So, yeah, doing very well, and just have high hopes for the California International Marathon this year. But our goal and mission is to promote the plant-based diet, a vegan diet, and inspire everyone in our community and other communities to do the same thing. So kind of our mission, and my personal goal is to get as good as I can, to run with the best, show other athletes around me that you can thrive on a vegan diet.
So your athletic performance keeps continuing to improve being vegan. I mean, do you feel better, stronger? I mean, how?
Yes.
Yes?
Since I've become vegan a little over a year ago, it's been kind of a transition going over to more whole food. I was doing a lot more vegan junk foods for a while, and I've cut most of those out. Now, I make little exceptions here and there, but as I transition to a healthier vegan diet, I notice my performance and my energy level and everything even getting more. And so it's just the fine-tuning. Because when you first go vegan, you kind of want to splurge on some of the vegan junk foods and stuff like that, which is fine for a while. But then, you know, you fine-tune it and you do what's best for optimal performance.
Mm-hmm. Fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds, leafy greens, big salads,
yes,
you know,
indeed.
All those good things.
Big salads
so.
Almost every night for me, huge salads.
yeah. Well, they're delicious and healthy. And Team Veg is what then?
I'm sorry, what?
The Team Veg project that you have is what?
It is a group of mostly vegan athletes. People that are not quite vegan yet are welcome to join our team in training. But we ask that somebody be completely vegan before they put a shirt on and represent us. But they're welcome to come out so we can inspire them to go vegan. So, yeah, it's just you know, it's a team of athletes, or you know, anywhere from just the new runner to elite. You know, I'm probably the best on the team right now, so competitive. Highly competitive runners to amateur runners, but anybody that wants to be out there and represent what we're doing.
Okay, the website is sacveganchallenge.com. You'll find Jed there and Bethany. Sac, as in Sacramento, veganchallenge.com. Thanks for being with us again, Jed. We appreciate it. We are coming up on Victoria Moran, Simone Reyes, and Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. You know, I've been telling you about Viva La Vegan Grocery for a little over a year now. I've done broadcasts live from the location in Rancho Cucamonga, 9456 Robert Street. And it's a huge store, 6,000 items, everything vegan. And now there is the grand opening coming up this coming weekend of Viva La Vegan in Santa Monica. Not the huge location like it is in Rancho Cucamonga, which remains open, but probably a little more convenient for you to reach. It's on Ocean Park and 28th in Santa Monica. Ocean Park and 28th in Santa Monica this coming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Check it out for the grand opening launch of the Santa Monica location. You can go to VivaLaVeganGrocery.com and you can order products online right there. And this is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Today I am honored to have Victoria Moran on the program. She is, the author of 11 groundbreaking books on veganism, spirituality, and health. These include the best-selling Creating a Charmed Life, which has been translated into 30 languages. I didn't know there were 30 languages. That many? Okay. The Essential Vegan Weight Loss Guide, The Love Power Diet, and her latest, Main Street Vegan, Everything You Need to Know to Eat Healthfully and Live Compassionately in the Real World. Seems like some good people are reading the book. Looks like Russell Simmons likes it, Moby likes it, Bill Clinton likes it. I'm going to have to work on Bill Clinton a little bit. and you may have seen Victoria on Oprah, but if you missed that, well, you may have seen her on Oprah because, well, Victoria has been on Oprah twice and didn't get Oprah sued by the Texas Cattlemen's Association like some people I know. So anyway, Victoria Moran is a professional speaker, director of Main Street Vegan Academy. How are you today, Victoria?
Hey, I'm terrific. Thanks, Bob. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thanks for being with us today. After your name, I see CHHCAADPVLCEFBI NSA. No, not those.
Yeah, the first couple are holistic health counselor. A lot of people here in New York City do the Institute for Integrative Nutrition Program, and I've actually taught for that program. It's now gone online, and so my class is there if people take that course now. But I was interested in getting that holistic health counselor certification from a more vegetarian perspective. So I found that some people were doing the program from a vegan point of view, and that was great. And then they decided to go off and do other things and moved away. And that must have still been in my head when I came up with Main Street Vegan Academy, because we train the VLCEs, Vegan Lifestyle Coach and Educator, in every aspect of the vegan life, because as you know, it's not just about health, it's about changing the world.
That's for sure, and it's related to everything. And well, I mean, you're obviously dedicated to the cause of veganism, so you know, when and how, why did you go vegan? When?
I felt something for animals from the time I was a little girl. I remember distinctly when I first heard the word vegetarian. I came in from school when I was 5 years old. I had learned the four food groups, which, if you remember, were half animal foods that we were supposed to be eating at that time. And my grandmother, who was rather curmudgeonly and wonderful, said, "There are people who never eat any meat, and they're called vegetarians. And I could take you out to Unity Village." We lived in Kansas City near the headquarters of Unity, which at that time had a restaurant that was highly vegetarian. And she'd say, "And I could get you a hamburger made out of peanuts, and you would think you were eating beef." And I remember then thinking, there is so much I don't know. And different experiences growing up, having ordering fish at a restaurant, having them bring the whole fish with a head and eyes, you know, these things were really traumatizing. So I tried to be vegetarian at 13, didn't know what to eat, and that didn't last. But I knew that at one point I would grow up and learn to do this. And I got into yoga when I was about 17. And at that time, you were just expected, if you were going to do yoga, you at least had to not eat meat, fish, and eggs. You know, dairy they were okay with, but you had to do at least that much. And that was the start for me. And then I met Jay and Freya Dinshaw of the American Vegan Society. I always tell people these days who've never heard of the American Vegan Society that this wonderful, insightful couple founded the American Vegan Society in 1960, which was the first season of Mad Men. Now, people who weren't alive in 1960 can relate to the first season of Mad Men. It was an entirely different world. So Jay and Freya took me the rest of the way.
Ah, okay. And so you've written many books, some of them, you know, covering vegan issues. What's different, would you say, about Main Street Vegan?
For me, in terms of covering vegan issues, it's my new one. So we're getting veganism with my 30 years as a vegan, and oh my gosh, 42 years, I guess, as a vegetarian. I've raised my daughter vegan. I used to be overweight. I was always either overweight, obese, or dieting. All of those states were pretty miserable. I've kept that off ever since.
Was it 60 pounds overweight you said you were?
Yeah, 60, 65, yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of stopped weighing when it got way up there because it was too depressing. But yeah, it's in the 60-plus range. Mm. And the other thing that I see, Bob, is having done this for so long, I think I've been asked, as I'm sure you have, every question. You've run into just about every situation in terms of traveling the world, being involved in different sorts of professional and relationship situations. I mean, I talk about things in Main Street Vegan that I've never seen anywhere else. For example, in the chapter on raising kids, now most people just look at nutrition and socialization, and those are important, but those are really pretty easy. What gets tough about raising kids is, what if the family falls apart? What if everything is awful? I mean, it happened in my case. I was widowed when my daughter was little. I was a single mom for many years. And then when I met my husband that I have now, he had three kids who ate meat, who still eat meat. And being vegan in this blended family was really, really tough. I never thought it was difficult, because I created my own little world with my daughter, but then thrust into this other thing, we had all these other issues. So what I wanted to do with Main Street Vegan was write a book for people who wanted to do this, but who were thinking, ooh, it's a little hard, it's a little weird, it's a little extreme, and to say, you know, it's really not. You just need a guide, and I'll be your guide. And that's what people are telling me I'm succeeding at with the book.
Hmm. Well, that's great. And I see you and I went vegan around the same time. I've been vegan now, I say, for 29 years. So it's right around that same time. And so you have a couple of chapters in the beginning of the book to help people to get started on the vegan path. So tell us a bit about them and how you get people started.
Yes. Well, of course, I want everybody to just do it right now.
Me too.
Here's the situation. This is what happens to animals. This is probably the state of your arteries. So let's just start now. But I also understand that it is still an acultural choice. This is something we're going against what mom fed us and what we were taught in school we needed to be big and strong. So we all do it at our own rate. And I would rather somebody takes a little time if they need that than to just be an overnight sensation that 6 weeks from now says it didn't work for me, I'm paleo. So I tell people, what are you like? Are you the kind of person who can make change and that's just it? The example that I give is, if you're in a bad relationship, as soon as you see the writing on the wall, are you just out of there and you never even send a text? Or are you somebody who, like, well, let's just try to give it another chance? You know, depending on the kind of person you are, you're going to be able to make the change faster or slower. But I have to say that of all the different ways of going vegan that I talk about the one thing at a time. You know, some people want to get rid of one animal product and kind of keep the others. There's the vegan at home plan, because you do have control over things in your own home. And if you're too scared to navigate restaurants and go into dinner at your mother's right now, you could do it that way. But the one that I really, really like is the day-at-a-time plan, because that's how the alcoholics stop drinking in AA. And that way you don't have to worry about what's going on later. You're just going to eat vegan today. Breakfast, mm-hmm. lunch, dinner, whatever snacks you happen to eat, that's vegan. That's all you have to worry about. And then your sister's wedding next June, your trip to Argentina in 2015, none of that matters because you're vegan today. But there are lots of ways to do it.
I like that. I like your way a little better than Mark Bittman with his vegan before six. Or, you know, I mean, it's so funny how everybody realizes that being vegan is cool. It's the right thing to do. And, you know, they just don't want to do it. So they can be like, oh, vegan before six. Or I'm finding what Bill Clinton, vegan plus. I know he likes your book, but didn't you tell him fish and eggs? We're not vegan? Or...
Well, you know, with the celebrities, and this is why it's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, it's wonderful that we have them, but on the other hand, there are all these, we don't really know what they're eating. I mean, we're not traveling around with them. I did talk with someone whose spouse works in his office and was told that every time he travels, the directives go out from the office to every place that he's going to be, every kind of formal dinner, instructing them that he needs a strictly vegan diet. So I don't know how close he is to vegan in his day-to-day meals, but I do know that people who are doing it just about, or even the, you know, vegan till five, of course I want everybody to be vegan till forever, but I also know that there are so many people doing it a little bit that it is helping, and it is meaning that there is food for us at every place that we go. It's mm-hmm. just more available, more accessible, and I've just got to hope that the people who are doing it till five...
it's till six. It's
six?
another full hour of drudgery until you can eat that steak or whatever, you know. But he also has to realize that his body doesn't have the same time clock, and he's not going to avoid the heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, etc. He's not avoiding the animal suffering and the environmental damage. So, you know, I mean, and he says he cheats every day. He cheats as soon as he wakes up. He has half and half in his coffee. So there's a diet he can't even stay with. We have to take a break. We're talking to Victoria Moran, and her new book is Main Street Vegan, Everything You Need to Know to Eat Healthfully and Live Compassionately in the Real World. Please support the program with a tax-deductible donation. Find the donate button at goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. If you'd like to be a sponsor and advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services, email me. It is bob@goveganradio.com. Coming up next hour, Simone Reyes, Professor Gary Francione. We're talking today to Victoria Moran. She is the author of her new book, which is Main Street Vegan. She's the director of the Main Street Vegan Academy, training vegan lifestyle coaches. And... as I said, mainstreetvegan.net. Victoria, you say that a cow had a profound impact on your life. Is that true?
Yeah, she really did. I was living in the central Missouri Ozarks. It was a really difficult time in my life. I said that I was widowed. My daughter was a little tiny thing. And I was completely out of my depth there. I thought the country would be a simpler life, but I didn't know anything about living in the country. And one day I was talking to a friend there, and I said, you know, I've been a vegan for a while now, vegetarian, really long time, but I've never been to a slaughterhouse, so I don't know how bad they really are. And she said, oh, my husband's friend owns a slaughterhouse. If you smile real pretty, he'll show you everything you want to see. So I spent a day in a slaughterhouse, and it was really surreal, the smells, the sounds, the level of compassion I developed for the workers. I did not expect that to happen, but they were also trapped there. They were largely immigrants in this little tiny town in southern Missouri that the railroad had bypassed and the interstate didn't go by. There was just nothing else for them to do. But it was at the end of that day when they were bringing in the last few cows from a family dairy farm. And I found this really interesting because so many people say, well, I only eat, you know, the meat or the milk from good farms. Well, I understand that in the transition, yes, if you can find milk and meat from a farm that isn't as horrific as 98% of the farms, that's probably better. But in the end, they all are at the same place. And this particular cow was going up the ramp after everybody else. But when she got to a certain point, she could smell the blood that I had been smelling all day. She could hear the screams that I had been hearing all day, and she just stopped. Every instinct was saying, you're not going there. But the man up at the top of the ramp who had the captive bolt pistol to stun her whistled to her. He whistled to her the way he'd whistled to his dog when he got home that night, and she trusted him. She kind of cocked her head to the side as if to say, are you serious? That all my instincts are wrong and I can trust you? And she walked right up to him and, in essence, walked to her death. And when I saw that and connected with that one animal, I knew that telling her story was something that I would need to do for the rest of my life. Because I knew that when her parts and pieces showed up at a supermarket in St. Louis, that they wouldn't be bought by terrible, cruel people. They would be bought by people who just didn't know. They didn't know the system, and they didn't know her. So I tell her story whenever I get the chance, and I appreciate that you gave me that opportunity.
Well, I'm glad you did. I just recently, within the last few days, sent around a video on Twitter and Facebook of certified humane slaughter. And the cow in that video was just as betrayed as the one you saw, and I'm having nightmares from seeing that. There is no humane slaughter, no humane meat. The farms aren't really better. I mean, we just give ourselves excuses, you know? I mean, family farms are not better than factory farms. No animal agriculture, you know, is without total animal cruelty, torture, murder, abuse. So
I completely agree with you. And when I think about all of the great vegetarians, many of whom were vegans before the word was coined, we all like to call out Leonardo da Vinci and Shelley and Tolstoy. They didn't eat meat from factory farms because factory farms didn't exist. But they were great thinkers and great. The word is humanitarian, and it ought to really include everybody. We need a new word for that. They were people we look up to and admire, and they didn't eat the meat because it's wrong to kill. And like you say, how can you kill in a humane way?
And people should watch that. Why, I'm afraid we are out of time. It's been a pleasure having you on today's program. We'll have to do it again. It's taken us so long to get you on here. We've been on 12 years. Let's not wait too long. It's Victoria Moran. Visit her website, mainstreetvegan.net. mainstreetvegan.net. Thanks for being here today, Victoria.
Thanks so much. My pleasure.
Okay. We are coming up on Simone Reyes and Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Greetings once again, and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we have expanded now to 2 hours as part of our national syndication through the Genesis Communications Network. Inexplicably, we have been broadcasting for 12 years, you know, as heard on Air America and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations. Now the Genesis Communications Network, we have to pay for airtime. And that's where you come in. You can be a sponsor of the program and advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services. And you can make a tax-deductible donation. We do have the opportunity now to be on WWRL in New York again. We used to be on WWRL when we were on Air America. And station wants to charge us $600 a week for the 2 hours. And WCPT in Chicago, which wants to charge us $400 a week for the 2 hours. So if you could just write a check for $1,000 a week, we will be on air on two major radio stations in addition to the Genesis Communications Network, WWRL in New York, which wants to run us after Ring of Fire, which has a pretty big audience, and we'd like them all to hear about being vegan. So it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And you probably know Simone Reyes by now. She has become internationally famous in her breakout starring role on running Russell Simmons on the Oxygen Network. Her career path has taken her from receptionist at Def Jam Records to the person whom Russell Simmons now refers as his boss. And along the way, you may have seen her in many of the Beastie Boys music videos. She sang backup in their hit, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. And also, she has been on the Showtime series, The L Word, in the commercial for Panasonic's D-Snap with her employee, Russell Simmons. She's the boss, you know. And, of course, this is a very impressive show business resume, but to get on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, there has to be some sort of animal angle here, I would imagine. Welcome, Simone. How are you?
Hi, thank you. I'm happy to be here. And yes, there is a huge animal.
Is there ever? You know, I see that. I saw a talk of yours on YouTube, and it was such an impressive, all-encompassing, talk on compassion that you are the real deal when it comes to animals, no doubt. So,
how did
this start for you? I mean, how did you become a vegan and an animal rights activist?
I started over 20 years ago, and I call myself sort of, one of the activists that was raised by PETA, because I was eating meat and wearing wool and dairy, drinking dairy and the whole thing, just like most people do. I thought that I loved animals because I loved cats and dogs and horses, and I loved my animals that I had. But it wasn't until I was in college and I was watching a documentary that was showing scenes of the Canadian seal slaughter that's still going on today, and actually seeing the images of the seals being barbarically killed with all of the baby seals with their mothers sort of wailing and helpless in the background, that I realized that something was going on in the world that I didn't know about. And Brigitte Bardot, who's still a huge advocate for animals all over the world, she was on the ice, like a lot of celebrities do, to bring attention to the seal slaughter. And she whispered in the seal's ear, and she said, in French, and they subtitled it in the bottom, and she said, "Don't worry, we'll get them." And I thought, I don't know who these we are, but I'm going to find them, and I'm going to join that army, and I'm going to do everything that I can. At the time, it was just fur. And then, of course, once I joined, I called up PETA. I found out who the local big, sort of grassroots group was in New York. I joined them, and they became my teachers. And they basically led me through the back door of the world. And they showed me, where wool comes from, where silk comes from, certainly how meat is made, and how these billions of animals are raised only into suffering and then die, horrible deaths. And they told me about vivisection, and they told me about everything that I didn't know about. And I was shell-shocked and horrified, and I cried a lot. And then I just got mad, and then I just wanted to do everything I could to change it. And I think that we are changing it, but it's, sometimes it feels like it's slow going, but we are making huge strides from when I started back, in the 90s.
Right, definitely. Well, our numbers are growing in terms of being vegans, and
yeah.
I know that you're interested in pretty much all the aspects of animal liberation, and you're actually interested in the anti-vivisection conference coming up this coming weekend in Los Angeles, the Free the Animals conference at the LAX Westin. I've had a number of speakers from that conference on in recent weeks, and people can go to the archives to hear Michael Butke and Bob Ingersoll and Murray Cohen. And what's your interest in vivisection?
You know, I remember reading a quote by Gandhi years ago. He said, "I abhor vivisection with my whole soul, as the scientific discoveries stained with innocent blood hold no consequences." I hold no consequence. And I think that that's where our main argument comes from. You know, we see these primates and dogs and cats and birds and mice and rats, and we see footage of what they have to endure, and the isolation and the fact that they're not allowed to have any natural interactions. They're not allowed to feel the sun on their backs, you know, and all that they basically have going for them are the only way that they feel human touch is somebody who's reaching into the cage to torture them. Whether the footage was obtained from, you know, the Animal Liberation Front, or however it is, you know, undercover investigations, however it is that I was able to see these images, you know, I saw animals in restraints and with holes being drilled into their skulls and their skin being burned off and their spinal cords being crushed and their vocal cords being cut so that researchers don't have to hear the sound of them barking and their cries. And I was beyond horrified. You know, I don't think that people can watch that without having a physical reaction. I've never shown any video to anybody without them having to get up or having looked sick, because they don't know that it's happening. They don't know that mostly they're the ones funding it. You know, at Christmas time, everybody wants to, you know, do the right thing and give money to different organizations because they promise a cure for this disease or they promise research that will make this drug safer, and it's actually their money that are funding these experiments that we believe are wasteful and unreliable and unbelievably, incredibly cruel.
That's for sure. And where's the cure? No cure. You can't extrapolate results from other species to humans. It doesn't
That's
work.
Right.
And it's just billions of dollars being wasted. Billions and billions
right.
of dollars being wasted. I think this month is a pink ribbon month with Susan Komen Foundation, Breast Cancer Foundation, people being led in the wrong direction there with more money going toward animal research when people should be, told to go vegan because
yes.
breast cancer is being caused by consumption of animal products and
preventative yeah. disease education is one of the most important things that should be funded, and certainly one that is not funded in the way that it needs to be, because yes, as you said, you know, food is our fuel, food is our medicine, and food ultimately is you are what you eat. And it's so sad when you see children that are, you know, having issues with, you know, obesity and diabetes and growing into adults that have issues with high cholesterol and heart disease and cancer and all these things that we know if we were simply feeding our bodies what they were meant to eat in a pure and clean form, that we would all be living much longer and without these diseases that animals in the wild simply don't deal with because they're eating what they're supposed to eat and we're eating processed foods and disease ridden meat and dairy and having to suffer the consequences. And if we just were educated at a young age on what it means to eat a healthy, clean diet, we would all be so much happier and healthier, and our children would be so much happier and healthier. So it's really just a sad state of affairs all around.
It is. I mean, billions of dollars wasted to torture animals to find the cure to eating, you know, meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. You know, it's just so so insane. You know, we have the
That's
cure right.
right
here, you know. So we're talking to Simone Reyes. You know her from Running Russell Simmons. And you were the one to get Russell Simmons to go vegan, weren't you?
You know, I would like to say that
say
I was.
It. Come on.
He
say,
always
no, okay.
credits me. He credits me with giving him a lot of information. He credits his friend Glenn E. Friedman, who is a very well-known photographer and longtime vegan. But ultimately, I would say it was also Shannon Gannon and David Life, who run the Jiddu Mukti Yoga Center in New York, and Russell is a devout yogi. And I think all of those different factors contributed to him being a devout vegan and animal rights advocate. So I think it was a group effort. It kind of took a village, but once we got him there, he was there to stay.
Well, what was he eating like when you first went to Def Jam, right? You were, what, right out of high school?
Right out of high school. And, yes, White Castle hamburgers and sliders, unfortunately, were very popular.
You know, and, I hate to admit this, but White Castle, I won a White Castle hamburger eating contest in New York. I just say that because I feel lucky to be alive. I ate 30 White Castle hamburgers when I was 16. And you just brought back horrible memories for me.
So. Sorry.
White Castle.
Yes. Yes.
And that's great that he's, vegan now.
We just shot a great PSA for Farm Sanctuary, and they're running a contest right now that everybody should check out on their website. And we've done PSAs for, PETA and the ASPCA and Mercy for Animals. Russell just did a really beautiful one for them. And pretty much, whenever anybody asks us to do anything when it comes to the animals, we never say no, because we know that the animals simply don't have time to wait. There are too many animals being killed for no reason and in the most horrific ways. So we all have to put our heads down and get to work.
Yeah, we have to take a break. We're talking to Simone Reyes. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Please help us buy radio airtime to get the vegan message out. The website is goveganradio.com. Click donate. It's a tax-deductible donation. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. And we have a few more minutes left with Simone Reyes, whom you know from running Russell Simmons. And then we will talk to Professor Gary Francione, Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione coming up. And running Russell Simmons, Russell Simmons and you, I guess, regard veganism as a social justice issue. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I've always made a point to point out the fact that Russell actually has no desire to be a guardian to an animal. I bring my blind dog, Hubble Yoda, with me to the office every single day, goes on business trips. Russell never reaches out to pet him. It is simply not in his, in his daily plan. And sometimes people find that surprising. And to me, it's not at all, because it is a social justice issue. We are not all mad animal lovers. We're not all fanatics. Some of us, if you come into our house, we have, a lot of rescue animals, but many of us have no animals in our house. And that is because we simply recognize it as a social justice issue. And like every other issue, sexism, racism, homophobia, whatever it is, you do not have to be a fanatic to see what is socially just and what is unjust. So yes, we see it, in the movement in the same way, and certainly probably not in our lifetime. It'd be amazing if it was, but in, however many years, people will look back in the same way that they look back at the way that women were treated, in the same way that African Americans were treated, in the same way that gays and lesbians and transgender people are being treated even now, and be horrified and say, my God, we actually were able to take animals and put them in cages and torture them, and it was legal. We were actually able to eat them, and that was legal, and factory farm them, and wear them, and, burn their hands so that they stand up on their hind legs, these magnificent elephants and tigers and things like that in a circus, and people will say, how in the world was that legal? And that day is coming, and we're just trying to rush to that day, because it's not fair to all the animals that are, having to endure this sick, sick world of animal torture and exploitation.
Well, let's ban it all right now. I'm ready.
I hope that we can see people come out for the primates and other animals that are at UCLA right now. We're having a big protest on Monday, the 14th, in here in Los Angeles on the corner of LeConte and Westwood Village, and I hope at 11 o'clock that we can see people come out, because if we have massive numbers, UCLA will have to listen. Harvard closed their primate center. You know, mm-hmm. it shows that if activists stand up and say enough is enough, and they show up at these protests, and they get on the media, and they make it front page news, and they get it in people's consciousness, we can actually free the animals from the cages. It is working, but we have to all gather in large numbers and make it happen.
And that is the conference coming up this weekend, the Free the Animals Conference at the Westin LAX. It's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with the UCLA protest on Monday. And for information on it, go to saneonline.org, saenonline.org. And Simone Reyes, I want to thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having the show. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to having you back on. You're a wonderful spokesperson for the cause. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks. And now on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, it is time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione from Rutgers University and AbolitionistApproach.com. How are you today, Gary?
I'm very well, Bob. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's good to be with you. I just wanted to say before I launched into what I was going to talk about tonight, I hope people don't think, I was just listening to what Ms. Reyes was saying. I certainly look at veganism as a social justice issue. I look at animal rights as a social justice issue and have for the 32 years I have been involved with it. But I also consider myself somebody who has a lot of affection for animals. And so I don't think that we, and I do enjoy the company of non-human animals and taking care of non-human animals. And I would like to discourage the idea that you are, that if you really like animals and you like taking care of animals, that somehow means that you can't view this as a social justice issue, or that you are somehow a fanatic or whatever the expression was, because we have five rescued dogs. I adore them. I wish I lived in a world in which there were no dogs, actually. I would like to see all domesticated animals not be on the planet. Let the wild animals live by themselves, and we should not interfere with them. We should stop domesticating animals and bringing domesticated animals into existence. But I also think that while they're here, we've got to take care of them, and they are wonderful. They're wonderful creatures, and one should take as many as one can and give them homes and love them, because the idea that love isn't a good thing is an idea that I think is alien to the way that I think, and I hope to the way that other people think. In any event, what I wanted to talk about tonight was, you know, we are at this point in the movement, however you want to define that. You've got a lot of these large organizations, and people always say to me, well, you know, but they promote veganism. And the answer is, no, they don't. The large groups don't promote veganism, not the way I believe veganism needs to be promoted and conceptualized.
Well, like they could use the word vegan or veganism once in a while. That might be helpful, right?
Instead of
vegetarian.
Well, you know, a lot of these groups promote. They say you should go vegetarian or vegan. So they're actually promoting vegetarianism. So this nonsense that I hear that they're not, you know, that they're only promoting veganism is completely false. They're promoting vegetarianism, but they're also promoting, you cannot have campaigns for cage-free eggs, crate-free pork, all that sort of stuff, without conveying the idea to the public that those things are normatively, morally good things. And part of the problem is, right now there's a schism between those people who look at veganism as merely a way of reducing suffering, and those of us who view veganism as a social justice issue, as an issue of fundamental justice, as an issue of nonviolence. And where in the former group, which is basically all the large groups, I don't care which one you want to talk about, whether it's HSUS or PETA or Mercy for Animals or Farm Sanctuary, whatever, Vegan Outreach, they're all the same. They all promote veganism as a way of reducing suffering. I think this is problematic because it reflects, they have all bought into Peter Singer's idea that the real problem is not that we're killing and using animals, the real problem is that we cause them to suffer. So we ought to pursue anything which causes a reduction in suffering, and that includes veganism. So if you want to be vegan, that's just great. But if you don't want to be vegan, that's just great too. Then you should eat cage-free eggs, or you should be a vegetarian, or, you know, whatever. And I think that's a fundamentally different position from the position that I articulate and have for some time now, the position I believe you subscribe to, the idea that veganism is a social justice issue. It's an issue of nonviolence. It's an issue of really what we owe fundamentally to non-human animals, and that killing them, however humanely we treat them, however painlessly we kill them, I mean, we don't. We kill them in horrible ways, and we treat them horribly. But that's not the point. The point isn't how well we treat them, how nicely they live, how well they die. The issue is we've got no business doing this. We cannot justify animal exploitation. And it's not just a matter of reducing suffering. That's part of it. We want to reduce suffering. But we also want to respect a fundamental principle of nonviolence and a fundamental principle of justice, that animals have a right to live. They have an interest in their lives. They value their lives just the way that you value yours, I value mine. They care about themselves even if nobody else cares about them, just like you and just like me. They may not think about it in the same way because they don't use language, they don't use symbolic communication, but they have equivalent, you know, they care, they value. In their way, they value their lives the same way that we value ours. And so this nonsense of, you know, well, veganism is simply a way of reducing suffering. So it's one of a number of things that we ought to be pursuing and supporting along with vegetarianism.
What's meant by that, do you think? Is that meant reducing suffering by the number of animals killed because we're vegans, we don't have, there's no consumer demand for them? I mean, is that
I think that people would agree that veganism is a way of reducing suffering in that if you are not consuming animals, then you're helping to reduce suffering. But they don't see that as being qualitatively different from other ways that they claim reduce suffering. So, you know, if you choose to be a vegan, well, that's great. You're reducing suffering because you're not consuming animals. But if I don't choose to be a vegan and I want to consume cage-free eggs or crate-free pork, that's great because I'm being socially responsible and I'm reducing suffering. So that's why you've got all of these groups engaged in this completely chaotic, completely confused. I mean, you want to talk about the animal confusion movement. It's not an animal rights movement, it's an animal confusion movement where you've got these large organizations that are just promoting a completely confused message. Something that people, I mean, look, the average person out there doesn't get it, doesn't understand. I have people coming up to me constantly saying, "Well, you know, I'm so excited. I'm with you. I'm an animal rights person. I bought cage-free eggs at Whole Foods today." Yeah. And you know, and I know PETA gave Whole Foods an award, and I'm an animal rights person. Now, it's not a surprise that people think this way, because this is exactly what the large organizations are promoting. I mean, mm-hmm. You have people out there saying, "Well, you know, I bought dolphin safe tuna because that's what HSUS told me to do. I'm an animal rights person."
Yeah,
you see, and this is
buy the tuna safe tuna. Tofu. That would be
exactly.
Tofu.
We've lost the whole idea that the animal that what veganism really is about is a fundamental commitment to justice and to nonviolence. What we're basically saying is we cannot justify eating, wearing, using, consuming animals. End of story. Period. We can't morally justify it. So we must withdraw from that from participating in that system of exploitation. And yes, we want to reduce suffering. But it's not just about reducing suffering. It's about justice. Visit
hey, Gary,
my website.
We have a break coming. Can you hang on for a couple minutes
more? Sure, of course I can, Bob. Sure.
Okay,
absolutely.
Stay through the break. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. The website is goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. Facebook. Figure it out if you can get onto a Bob Linden page or a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden page. Congratulations. There seem to be many of them. So much confusion. We've been talking about how confusing the animal rights movement is right now. Ironically, Gary, so one of my best, we're talking to Professor Gary Francione of Rutgers University, abolitionistapproach.com. We speak to him every week. And ironically, the best sponsor of this program is Vegetarian House Restaurant in San Jose, 100% vegan restaurant. Last week, I emceed World Veg Fest for the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. Dixie May, the president of that society, is vegan for 34 years. They both know, the restaurant and Dixie both know, that there's been a transformation of the word, that it doesn't quite mean the same thing, that when it was the San Francisco Vegetarian Society 35 years ago or Vegetarian House 20 years ago, things have changed. And so if you were to go to the Mercy for Animals booth last weekend there, the person who was doing the booth was complaining to me that, look at this material, it all just says Go Vegetarian. What happened? What happened to Mercy for Animals? And all of these groups who are now saying Go Vegetarian, which I think now people interpret to mean consume animal products.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, remember something. Veganism has always been different because even if you're vegetarianism really should, if it
should be vegan, right? Shouldn't well, a pure vegetarian should be vegan, right?
Well, yeah, but veganism goes beyond. Vegetarianism deals with what, you know, is simply a dietary term. And so if we ate complete, you know, if we were eating nothing but plant foods, we could say, well, we have, you know, if we were using the word vegetarian properly, we would say, well, we're vegetarians. But there are vegetarians who still wear leather or wool or silk, or who still use animal products or still have leather in their car and still, you know, I mean, veganism really was formulated as sort of taking a step beyond diet. I mean, or although Watson talked about a vegan diet, I think he meant to apply the term, and he did apply the term beyond just diet, although he did use it with respect to diet. I think he meant the term to be used as sort of in a broader way, that we just don't participate in animal exploitation, you know, both with respect to our diet and beyond our diet. So, you know, I think it's fine to talk about a vegan diet, but I think, you know, talk about a vegan, when I use the word vegan, I generally mean somebody who does not eat, wear, use, consume animal products, and who tries to object to animal exploitation in every way possible, given the opportunities that he or she has in her life, or his life. So, you know, but I agree with you. I mean, part of what's happening is because of this move toward the conceptualizing this issue as one really dealing with just suffering, or primarily with suffering, that all of the large groups are focusing on vegetarianism and Meatless Monday. I mean, I'm sorry, I have such a horribly, I think Meatless Monday is a ridiculous concept. The idea that, well, we don't eat meat on this day, but we eat other animal products. So, you know, and we just do this one day. This is just for one day. The idea.
It's like rape-free Monday. Right? It's rape-free Monday.
Exactly, but it's not even that you're not exploiting animals for just one day. You're not exploiting some animals for just one day, because if you're eating dairy, if you're eating eggs, you're continuing to exploit animals, and you're continuing to participate directly in the torture and death of animals. So it's a meaningless concept. You know, Meatless Monday. And when I was at the so-called animal rights 2013 conference in June, people were just ecstatic about Meatless Monday. They thought Meatless Monday was just revolutionary. And I thought, boy, we're really having low expectations for the revolution, aren't we? But
right.
But they thought,
well, I'm from Meatless Tuesday through Sunday. That's my campaign, basically.
Yeah, well, you so, know, yeah. As a matter of fact, what I've been doing now on the website on abolitionistapproach.com is every Monday we put up a new poster, you know, that we've designed called Vegan Monday, Vegan Every Day. And then during the week, I will post, examination. Today is Meatless Tuesday, Vegan Tuesday, I joke with people about that. But in any event, look, the bottom line is, veganism is a matter of social justice. We want to say no to animal exploitation, and it's not just a matter of reducing suffering.
We're out of time. Abolitionistapproach.com. Go to Vegetarian House in San Jose, vegetarianhouse.us. For your catering in the Bay Area, it's 100% vegan, as is this program. Please go vegan. Love animals. Don't eat them. Don't wear them. Don't buy products. Experiment.